You're listening to the Jewish Living Podcast. I'm Rabbi Nachum Meth. Shalom, everyone, and welcome to part three of our Laws of Passover series on the Jewish Living class. We're going to talk today about the laws of the Seder. Last week, we talked about how to clean for Pesach. The week before, we talked about how to kosher your kitchen for Pesach. Today, let's talk about the Pesach Seder. There are actually a substantial amount of laws and what you need to know for the Pesach Seder, but I think the most important thing, just as to start the conversation, the most important thing when it comes to the Pesach Seder is to remind ourselves what we're doing and why we're there. The function of the Pesach Seder is really a reaffirmation of our fundamental belief that God took the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt. And as Ramban highlights, a message that we've been sharing a lot at the Kollel in anticipation of the Pesach season, as Ramban highlights, the Passover narrative, the Exodus narrative, really is so fundamental in Judaism because it's an affirmation of our belief that God didn't just create the heavens and the earth, you know, so long ago and walk away, but God is actually intimately involved in the affairs of mankind. And God is not just the God of creation, as we say, but God is also the God of history. And the Exodus narrative, the story of Passover and Pesach and Yetzias Mitzrayim, is really fundamentally one of the greatest examples and demonstrations of the fact that God cares about right and wrong. The Egyptians are punished for doing what's wrong. And it's because of that Pesach is so central in Judaism. So as we're going to see, and we've seen in the last couple of weeks, that there are a lot of laws associated with Pesach in terms of koshering our kitchens and cleaning for chametz and all of that. And as we're going to see in a moment, the Pesach Seder is full of ritual and observances. At their core, we have to keep our eye on the ball, and that is to remind ourselves that the purpose of the Pesach Seder, the purpose of why we're doing all these things, is to remind us of those core beliefs, that I believe in the story, I believe that God indeed did punish the Egyptians with the 10 plagues, and then God did redeem us from the land of Egypt. And we have to remind ourselves of those things. As a matter of fact, there are many mitzvahs, there are many laws and requirements and mitzvahs, potentially Torah mitzvahs, at the Passover Seder, but certainly one of the mitzvahs is V'gadat Levincha B'yom Ahu, is to tell over to our children this story. And it's so critical, and we have to keep our eye, of course, you know, very squarely set on that ball. That said, I strongly believe, and I wish I had a good source to back this up, but I don't, but I'm sure it's there. So if not, this is just Rabbi Meth, you know, just making stuff up. But I really believe this is true. You know, it's a remarkable thing. This year we'll be sitting down as a nation for the 3,336 year since Yetzias Mitzrayim, since the Exodus. And it's an amazing thing that Jews, for generations, for more than three millennia, we still mark Pesach. We still mark Passover. We still tell over the story, and we still believe, and there always have been Jews who believe deeply in this whole story. And I believe strongly that this remarkable survival of this telling over of this narrative, of this core belief in Judaism, of the Exodus, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, I believe that a big reason why it stood the test of time is because of the halacha, because it has been ritualized with a set of laws. We don't just, here's what would not have worked. If, let's say, the year after Yetzias Mitzrayim, the year after the Exodus from Egypt, you know, everyone would have said, man, that was an amazing story that happened last year. Let's just all tell it over. That would have been great, and that would have worked for a year, would have worked for a generation. It may have worked for five generations, maybe 10 generations. But just telling over a story of what happened 100, 300 years ago would have died out. I do believe part of the reason why Judaism has perpetuated, you know, our core beliefs is because it has a halachic framework. We don't just talk about, Yitzias Mitzrayim. We don't just talk about the exodus from Egypt. We eat matzah. We eat the maror. We have the four cups of wine. And we have Passover seders. Generation after generation, we sit at the Passover table and tell the story in a ritualized way. Now, it should be noted, a lot of the things that we do at the Passover Seder, yes, there's a lot of ritual, but it shouldn't just be seen as like a hokey, you know, this is just some random, you know, symbol. But these things actually have deep meaning. They're halachas. They're part of the beautifully deep and rich tapestry of Jewish tradition, of Jewish halacha. And I strongly believe that it's because of that halachic framework. It's because it's been halachicized, because we have these details and we care about these details, that is part of the secret of Jewish survival. I really believe that very firmly. I'm very confident that that is true. So with that introduction, let's get going. On the day before Pesach, Erev Pesach, is in and of itself is actually a mini holiday of sorts. So again, if Pesach this year starts on a Monday night, so we talked about how Sunday evening, you already have to do the Bedikas Chametz. We've talked about that last week. Sunday evening, we have to actually do the search for Chametz. And then by Monday morning, we have to remember that we're actually not allowed to eat Chametz anymore already by Monday morning. By the fourth halachic hour in the day, it's roughly 10 o'clock. I don't have the, for here in Las Vegas, I don't have the Zmanim, the hours here in front of me, although I can pull them up. Hold on, everyone, 1 second. I'll pull up the exact time. It is 10:01. 10:01 is the last time to eat your chametz, and by 11:20 you have to have burned your chametz. So by Monday morning, even before the holiday begins, you're actually not allowed to eat your chametz. That's the fourth halachic hour of the day, and then by 11:20 you've got to have had that chametz annulled and burnt. Now, that day on Monday, so it's a little bit of a difficult day because you can't eat chametz. And you're actually prohibited. You're not allowed to eat matzah on that day either, because we want to make sure you're anticipating the matzah that we're going to be eating at the Seder. So Monday is, you know, a very limited, my kids always say it's the day of no food because you can't eat any bread, you can't eat any matzah, but you'll be okay, everyone. You'll survive on, you know, your eggs and chocolate or what have you. You know, you'll be just okay. Have some fruits and vegetables and round out a healthy diet. So keep that in mind even before the Seder starts. Also on Monday, it's a well-practiced tradition, something called the Tainis Bechorim. We know that Monday evening at the strike of halachic midnight, that's when all the firstborns died in Egypt. And that's when we're sitting down at the Seder midnight, halachic midnight, as we're going to see in a moment, is a significant time. Even nowadays, we try to make sure we eat the afikoman before halachic midnight, because at halachic midnight, when the Jews were in Egypt, that's when all the firstborns dropped dead. And really what ought to have happened is, I don't know how these things work, but really, you know, if all the Egyptian firstborns should have died, so really all of the Jewish firstborns ought to have died as well. God, of course, we know, spared the Jewish firstborns, but as a way of, you know, recognizing that it's almost like God's midas hadin, as it were, it's God's, like, judgment on firstborns was very apparent that day. There is a halacha, there is a tradition that firstborn males at least, fast on Erev Pesach, on the day before Pesach, so that would be Monday this year. Now, virtually nobody actually fasts, although it is a halachic idea that firstborns fast on Erev Pesach, it'll be very, very difficult for most. So what most people will do is, if you're a firstborn, or if you're not a firstborn, but you have a child who's not bar mitzvah yet, who is a firstborn, what most, again, assuming you're a male, the Mishnah Berurah explains that women, it's not as relevant to, although it's not according to all, in all situations, but firstborn males will go in the morning at davening at Shacharis, at the morning services on Monday morning, an Erev Pesach, the day before Pesach, and you'll go to the morning Shacharis, to the morning service, and you'll participate in what's called a Siyam Bechorim. The idea is, if someone makes a Siyam, which is a celebration, on finishing, completing, let's say, a tractate of the Talmud, so when you make a Siyam, when you make that conclusion, you have a small feast. It's a moment of celebration. You just finished, an entire Masechta, an entire tractate of Talmud, and by doing that, the halacha says you can be lenient because you know, although you're supposed to fast, the fast will be overridden if there is a reason to celebrate. So, for example, if there happened to be a bris that day, that would be another reason why you wouldn't need to fast. If you're, even if you're not the one making the bris, you're just celebrating at that bris, you wouldn't need to fast. So similarly, we tend, this has been going on now for several centuries, is that we're lenient, and firstborn males will typically make sure that they go to shul on Monday morning at almost, you know, every congregation. They will post what time the siyum bechorim, what time this, you know, feast, as it were. It's going to be very minimal. It's going to be a bunch of macaroons, orange juice, and coffee, because again, you can't eat anything on Monday. But to participate in this siyum celebration, that way you don't have to fast for Pesach. Now, just a couple other things to be aware of as we get ready for Pesach. So let's say on Monday, or even on the days leading up to Pesach, for those who are at our Seder demonstration on Sunday, we talked about some of these laws, but they're worth repeating. Number one is at the Passover Seder. So for this year, that'll be Monday night and Tuesday night. Any meats, so that's poultry or beef, cannot be roasted. It can't be cooked over an open flame. It has to be cooked in a liquid medium. So let's say you're going to put it in a pan, make sure it's got a quarter an inch of water or gravy or something like that inside of that pan. But we don't roast any meat or poultry as, you know, what we're going to eat at the Passover Seder. The reason for this, of course, is because back during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, during the times of the Temple, the Paschal Lamb, the Korban Pesach, which was a halachic requirement, which was eaten that night, that indeed was roasted. And as a way of sort of showing the distinction that we don't have the Korban Pesach, we don't have the Paschal Lamb this year, we're just going to eat, you know, whatever it is that we're going to eat, but we specifically go out of our way, we don't roast it. It should only be cooked in some kind of liquid medium. Additionally, the halacha is when you go to the store and you pick out your meat for Pesach, you don't say that the actual meat that you're going to be having that for at the Seder night, don't say this meat right here is for Pesach, is for Pesach, because it almost sounds as if you're designating it as the sacrifice, as the Korban Pesach. And it's actually codified in the halacha. You should say this meat is for Yom Tov, this meat is for the holiday. But we shouldn't say this meat is for Passover, this meat is for Pesach, as a way, again, of distinguishing and differentiating that nowadays we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have the Temple, and the meat that we're bringing is in no way should be considered, you know, part of the Paschal services or sacrifice that was required way back when. Now, when it comes to the Pesach Seder, you can't start the Seder. This year it's on Monday and here in Las Vegas. You can't start the Seder until, I believe it's 8:15. It's 60 minutes after sunset. The reason is, and this is an interesting halacha, this is an interesting law. Normally on Shabbos and for certain other of the holidays, you can bring in Shabbos early. You can start Shabbos early. You can make Kiddush early, have the motzi. You could do all of it, not, you know, within reason. There's a certain time, which is the earliest time you could do it, but you could certainly make Shabbos, you could bring in Shabbos an hour before, you know, stars out, for sure, even earlier than that. But when it comes to Pesach, there's a specific requirement that the Passover Seder cannot start until stars out. That's 60 minutes after sunset, which I believe this year in Las Vegas will be 8:15 on Monday night. However, there's a counterbalance to that as well. The Passover Seder, it can't start till 8:15, but the Seder is such a significant moment on the Jewish calendar. We want to make sure that everyone is up and alert and focused for the Pesach Seder. So although you can't start before 8:15, don't wait much longer before starting. That halacha actually brings, you should try to start it as early as possible. Don't dawdle. Specifically, 8:15 is late for children. And kids, we want to make sure the Passover Seder really revolves around the children of Higadat Levincha Bayom Ahu Leimor. We want to make sure that we're teaching our children the messages of Passover and the messages of Pesach. We want to make sure they don't fall asleep. So yes, you can't start it at, you know, earlier than 8:15, but don't start it at 9:15 either. So make sure as many of the preparations as possible are taken care of in advance. 8:15, you're ready to start Kaddish. You're ready to start the Seder. Everyone's seated, everyone ready to go. Make sure that, You know, so all of the things that you're going to need for the Seder, make sure they're prepped in advance. So a couple of things that you're going to need, we again, for those who are at our Seder demonstration, we went through some of these things, but just to as a reminder, things that you should have ready for your Pesach Seder in advance. Take care of these on Monday or Sunday of next week. Make sure you take care of these things in advance. Number one, if for maror, you're going to be using actual horseradish, it should be grated. Make sure you grate it in advance. If you're using romaine lettuce for maror, which is certainly a good idea, make sure you check that romaine lettuce for bugs. Do that in advance. Do not wait for Yom Tov to check it. Clean it in advance. Soap it and soak it. If you have questions on how to check romaine lettuce, check the CRC, check the Star K, or give me a call. I can show you how to do it. But make sure you check it in advance. Whatever you're going to be using for karpas, whatever you're going to be using for karpas. A lot of people use celery. I use baked potato. I use boiled potatoes. Make sure that they're cut and sliced and ready to roll. Salt water, you got to have that in advance. Make sure you have that prepared. Your charoses, have that prepared in advance. Again, charoses, we talked about this, on Sunday as well. People tend, or some people freak out about like charoses and making sure that they have, you know, the right charoses recipe. You don't need a fancy charoses recipe. It's ground almonds and apples and put some wine in there and cinnamon and anything like that, maybe some ginger, other nuts, almonds, and just grind it up and it's good. You're really using just a minimal amount of that. You're also going to want to make sure in advance for the Passover Seder, you're going to want to have take a hard-boiled egg and then roast it for a second, put it under a flame. We use that we're not going to actually eat that egg, but we're going to have that on the Seder plate, on the Ka'ara, on the Seder plate, as a remembrance of the Karban Chagiga. This is a ritual food that's not eaten at the Seder, but according to most, we put it there as a remembrance that back in the times of the Temple, there was a Karban Chagiga, a sacrifice for the holiday that was brought. And of course, we also have a Zroa, a shank bone. You should take, if you're able to get one from, you know, one of the kosher stores, they sell a shank bone. If you can't get a shank bone, get a chicken leg. You can't get a chicken leg, get a chicken wing, and roast it directly under a fire. But again, we don't eat roasted food at the Seder, so the Zeroa, this shank bone, it's there as a remembrance. We don't eat it, but we put it on the Passover Seder plate as, again, a reminder of the Karban Pesach, as a reminder of the Paschal lamb, which was brought again back in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And however, it's important to point out, and the Mishnah Berurah points this out, that that zroa, as well as that egg, it shouldn't be discarded if possible after the second Seder. Because it was used for a mitzvah purpose, you should use it. So I usually, what I'll do is I'll stick it in my chalent on Shabbos. I'll use it for something, but ideally it should be eaten. It should be used. But again, after the Seder, after your second Seder, don't just throw it out. Again, as we pointed out, you want to make sure, and the Mishnah Berurah really highlights this, we usually keep the kids up for, you know, they'll sing the Manishtana because maybe they practiced that in school, they learned the songs, and that's great, and we want to keep the kids engaged and keep them awake, but we also have to make sure that we're telling them the story. The Mishnah Berurah laments people who keep their kids up to sing the Manishtana and then they put them right to sleep. He says that they don't know the answer to their four questions. You got to teach them the answer. We were slaves to the Pharaoh in Egypt. Tell them the story. Make sure that people can digest and understand the story. The Mishnah Berurah brings that the Passover Seder, the table, should be set elegantly. Of course, Pesach and the Seder represent cheros, they represent freedom. We used to be slaves in bondage, and now we're kings. We're mamlachas kanim, we're a nation of kings, and we are required, in certain instances, as we're going to see, we act regally. And the Mishnah Berurah talks about how great rabbis who used to live very simple and humble lifestyles, whatever they had, when it came for Pesach, they would set the table as lavishly as possible. And again, within reason, but it is an important value. You want to make sure the house looks presentable and looks beautiful. This is such a sacred day. Now, you got to make sure you have a good Haggadah. I always recommend The art scroll, I don't have it with me here, unfortunately. There are a million Haggadahs that are available, and they're all great, and they're wonderful to study out of, but I always use at my pace, at my Pesach Seder, I have a million that I keep to, so that everyone who comes to my Seder, we're literally all on the same page. We use the art scroll basic Haggadah. You could get it on Amazon. I'm sure it's less than, it's probably $5 at most, you know, something like that, $7. Very basic, nothing but the news. It has the order of the Haggadah, the order of the Seder. It has it in English, has very clear instructions, and it's great to have. I love getting like enough so that everyone at my Seder table has the same Haggadah. Again, if someone wants to use their own in my family, that's fine. But I like making sure I could tell everyone, okay, we're now on page 46. Okay, you know, like it just keeps everyone on the same page. But you certainly want to have a good Haggadah. Yes, the Maxwell House will do. In every Haggadah, they will show you how to set up your Seder plate. You know, there are different customs. There are two main traditions. There's the Ramah's opinion, and then there's the Arizal's opinion. You can do whichever one you want and, you know, set it up as best as you can. Of course, when it comes to the Pesach Seder, we know the number four is a very important number. We have four cups of wine. We have the four questions, the four sons, and there is a requirement of having the four cups of wine. Now, the reason for the four cups of wine and the number four, why it comes up so much in the Pesach Haggadah, is because if you look in the beginning of a Parshas Va'era, I believe, when God foretells to Moshe to tell the Jewish people that the time has come for me to take the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt, he promises of redemption. But he doesn't just say, okay, we're going to leave Egypt. There are four languages of redemption. And to offer our Hakaras HaTov, our gratitude, our thanksgiving, that God, these four different, and they actually represented, you know, one, you know, when the slavery stopped, you know, when we actually left Egypt, when we were freed, there were different dimensions that God did. And each one of these four dimensions, we don't, you know, we say thank you. We say thank you to every element of goodness that God provides for us. And it's because of these four dimensions of salvation, that's why we have the four cups of wine. There are significant differences between Ashkenazic and Sephardic practice when it comes to the four cups of wine. I'm going to, you know, I teach it based on the Ashkenazic tradition. I'm an Ashkenazic Jew. But if you have Sephardic traditions, you know, they are going to be different. But for an Ashkenazic Jew, again, they're not huge differences, but there are differences in it. And certainly someone who has Sephardic traditions should keep their Sephardic customs and traditions. The Ashkenazic tradition is we make the bracha of borei pri hagafen. We make the blessing over the cup of wine each one of the four times. Sephardim don't do it quite like that. And very important, all men and children, or male children, when you drink those cups of wine on Passover, we lean to the left. Like so, when you drink from your four cups of wine, leaning to the left, leaning back, you know, it's not so common nowadays, but certainly back in biblical times and even post-biblical times, Mishnaic times, leaning was a sign of royalty. And on Passover, at the Leil Pesach, at the Passover Seder, you know, we're all like kings. So we're supposed to lean over to the left. And not to the right. Apparently, it's a choking hazard to lean to the to the right. We lean to the left as a way of again demonstrating our freedom. The wine that we the wine that we use for these four cups of wine, it can be grape juice. However, wine is definitely ideal and preferred. If a person is able to drink wine, you should. Red wine is also preferred over white wine. But again, if a person, you know, really doesn't like red wine, they only like white wine, it's fine. Person really doesn't like alcohol and finds it, you know, too difficult to drink, grape juice is also fine. How much wine do you need to have? Well, they're really two separate things. There's how big is your cup and how much of that cup do you need to drink? So if someone's asking me what you should do, your cup should be at least 3.8. I would even say 4 ounces, maybe even 4.5 ounces, which is very, very small. Let's say you had 3.8 ounces according to the Mishnah Brura, according to at least how most understand the Mishnah Brura, you know, 4 ounce cup is all you need. And of that, for each one of the four cups, you only need to drink half of that. So you only need to drink 2 ounces. That's hardly anything. So people, I know some people have a hard time with the four cups of wine. again, you don't need to drink that much. It's you know, virtually a little bit more than a sip. You know, measure it out. If a person really has a hard time, if a person is a diabetic, if a person really has like a sugar intolerance, speak to me, give me a call. There are things that you can do. You can dilute the wine. There's even smaller amounts. In theory, you can drink as little as 1.7 ounces, which is, again, it's unless a person is like horribly diabetic, it's virtually impossible. And even a diabetic will be able to drink the 4 cups with diluted wine, using the smallest amounts, the smallest shirim, you'll be fine. But again, assuming a person doesn't have any health concerns, it's just, you know, it just gives you indigestion or whatever. Drinking so much wine isn't so great. So again, you can use grape juice and it's totally fine. Use a cup that's 4 ounces. I like to go 4.5 ounces. And then you drink half of it. If you can drink the whole cup, great. Or drink half of it is certainly ideal. So those are the numbers. So there are different, again, the numbers are the smallest shirim, are the smallest measurements, according to some opinions, are as little as 3. I'd say 3.3. I think ideal is 3.8. If a person, you know, I do, you know, 4.5 or even 5 ounce cups are the best. And to try to drink for each cup, you know, according to some opinions, drink the whole cup. You don't need to do that. If you drink, even if you drink just the 1.7, drink 2 ounces, you'll be fine. So again, we mentioned it ideally should be alcoholic and ideally should be red if possible. When it comes to the matzah, and again, I just want to point this out, drinking the wine is obligated by men and women. Everyone's got to do it, and kids as well. We try to educate them. Chinuch, the Passover Seder is a lot about education, passing on these traditions. So we definitely want to make sure our kids, you know, give them the grape juice. We don't want to knock them out with alcohol, you know, excuse me. So, but we should definitely educate our children. When it comes to matzah, again, the same thing. Men and women are both obligated in matzah. There are 3 different parts in the Seder where we eat matzah. At a minimum, you have to have, you know, there are the two later parts of when we eat the matzah are again, they're part of the Seder, and you really, really should and really ought to, you know, eat the matzah there. But if, let's say, a person, again, a diabetic or a person has some, you know, real intolerances, so the minimum that you're going to need to eat is, I would say, is a half of a round matzah. Now, when it comes to matzah, when we spoke about this also on Sunday at the Seder demonstration for those who were there, but it's worth repeating. When it comes to matzah comes in 2 forms nowadays. You have the square machine matzah and you have the round hand matzah. Now, there are multiple differences between the machine and the hand matzah. One of them is how they're made. Machine matzah, as it's implied, is made on a machine, on a conveyor belt. The hand matzah is actually made by hand. The other difference is that the machine matzah is square. The hand matzah is typically round, and that's fine. There's no real distinction between in that regard. The big difference between most machine matzah and most hand matzah, especially the ones that you're going to get here in Las Vegas, the biggest difference is in Las Vegas, to the best of my knowledge, the hand matzah you're going to get is going to be called, it's also going to be shmura, whereas machine matzah here in Vegas, virtually all of it will not be shmura. What is shmura? Shmura means guarded. When it comes to the Passover Seder, the actual Seder, the matzah that we eat at the Seder, needs to be shmura, guarded. What that means is it was guarded from the time it was harvested. The wheat and the flour was guarded and used specifically for the intent of it being used for matzah and for the mitzvah on Passover. Machine matzah, in theory, can be shmura. And, you know, I actually own a couple boxes, but they don't typically, the ones that you get at Smith's and the Manischewitz or the Kedem or the whatever that is, it's not going to be shmura. Again, you can find it in very specific places if you know what you're looking for. They do make the machine matzah that's shmura, but it's harder to find here in Las Vegas unless you really know what you're looking for, which really leaves you for Passover. You're going to need those round hand matzahs, which are all, to my knowledge, they're all shmura. Classic place to get them, Costco. Costco sells that Holy Land matzah. I believe Smith's has a couple of brands as well. And other, I'm sure some of the other local stores carry it as well. It's a little bit pricier, but you do need it for the Passover Seder. at a minimum, a person is going to need to eat half of a matzah. Half of a matzah. If a person really has medical concerns, speak to me. There are, you know, other options out there. But a typical person, even if it's uncomfortable, you have to eat at least a half of a round matzah. That's not a lot. Again, if you happen to find machine matzah, the square matzah that's also shmura, I would say it's two thirds of a machine matzah. That's how much you need to eat. But as I mentioned, we actually eat the matzah in three different places. We have it first for motzi matzah, so you have to have half a matzah. We then, if you recall, we have the korech, the matzah and maror sandwich. So for there, you can use a quarter of a round matzah. And then again, later on for the afikoman at the end of the, of kind of towards the end of the Seder. So again, ideally a person should have another half of a matzah. If the person finds that too difficult, you could be lenient, have a third, but ideally it should be another half, which means over the course of the Seder, ideally a person should be eating 1 1/4 of a round shmura matzah. One and a quarter of the round matzahs is how much you're going to need. So if you're trying to just, you know, if you have guests or family or whatever you have, you should kind of count that out. Keep in mind, you're going to need 1 1/4 per person, again, as a minimum. And that's what you're going to be using for matzah. Now, when it comes to maror, maror is a lot easier. For maror, there are two options. You can use the romaine lettuce or you could use horseradish root. Now, a lot of times when us Jews, when we think of horseradish, we usually often think of chrein, which is the Yiddish word for horseradish, which usually has beets in it as well. That's why and I've seen this in a lot of people's seders, where they use the horseradish with beets that you buy in a jar, and you'll use that for Passover. You should not use that. Because you can't have, the maror can't have other things in it. So if your maror is red looking, you got a problem. Don't use it. That you should not be using that for the Passover Seder. You could use that for your gefilte fish. That's fine. But for the Passover Seder, when we eat maror, you should use one of two things, and these two things only. Either use romaine lettuce, which is totally fine. It's not like some people think like the hardcore guys use the horseradish and only wimps use the romaine. It's not true. The romaine is just as good as the horseradish. Some will even argue it's actually more preferable. I happen to like doing a little bit of the horseradish just because it kind of like clears out the sinuses. But if you're going to use the romaine lettuce, so you're going to need for the actual maror, you're going to need, if you use romaine lettuce, so if it's, you're actually using the whole leaf, so one big leaf of romaine lettuce is all you need. If you're going to just eat the stalks, so two stalks, roughly speaking. So one big leaf or two nice sized stalks. If you're going to be using ground horseradish, so make sure you grind it. Keep in mind, it could be very dangerous. If you grind it like 10, you know, right before the Seder, it could be really powerful. I've seen people like, you know, almost need to go be hospitalized because it was like so strong and they didn't realize it. It should be grated. You only need to eat 1 ounce of how much that is. And I believe that's the fluid ounce. You'll have to, I think 1.1 ounces, something like that. You'll measure that out. As we mentioned for korech, when we have the maror sandwich, so then again, you need a quarter of a hand matzah. And again, just that one big leaf of romaine lettuce. After we have our main meal at the Passover Seder, and of course, Magid is, you know, the whole order of the Passover Seder is so vital, and make sure you get into it and you sing it and all and be inspired. After Shulchan Aruch, after the actual meal, we have again Afikoman, where we have again another half of a matzah per person. The halacha is Ein Maftirin Achar HaPesach Afikoman. We don't eat anything after that Afikoman. You should not have anything else to eat. That's our dessert. If a person needs to drink water, that's okay. Tea is also okay. But other foods or really any other drinks, aside from their cups of wine, which we're going to have at the Seder, your person should not eat anything else other after that Afikoman. The Seder concludes, again, we have the other two cups of wine. The Seder concludes with the Hallel. And I always just like pointing out the Hallel in a certain point In a certain respect, at least in my family, is the highlight of the whole Seder, if not the highlight of the whole year. It should be sung with joy and emotion. There are two parts of the Hallel which are recited responsively. So if you have a Haggadah, you'll just follow along. But it's the section of Hodu Lashem Kitov, as well as the section of Ana Hashem. Now, those can be recited and should be recited responsively, where the leader of the household, sort of the head of the household, will lead, and everyone responds as prescribed in your machzor. Now, you don't need a minion. You don't need 10 men. You need 3 people. Even if it's, you know, one man and a woman and a child, that's fine. But as long as you have 3 people, it should be recited responsively, ideally. And again, the Hallel should be recited with joy, with conviction and emotion, and really to make it super special. Just to, you know, move back just a little bit, the Afikoman ideally should be eaten, really ought to be eaten before Halachic midnight. Halachic midnight is, I have my schedule, the Kollel schedule, Halachic midnight is at 12:39 a.m. So you really want to make sure you finish the Afikoman by 12:39 a.m. Really, in theory, there is a halachic preference that even the Hallel should be finished by then. Many people tend to have their seders go super duper late, and it is what it is. But at least the Afikoman, you should make sure that you finish that by 12:39 a.m. Those are your basic laws of your seder. I guess I've been haranguing and talking for quite a while, so I guess before we end, let me open up any questions about how to run the Seder, any specifics that anybody has. He leaves them speechless. All right, so that's the story, everyone. I'm going to wish everyone a Chag Kosher v'Sameach, a happy and healthy Pesach. If anyone has any questions about how to run your Seder or about any other Pesach-related questions, please feel free to reach out to me or any other of our Kollel rabbis. We're happy to help. If you have questions about selling your chametz, a question about cleaning, koshering, you know, what matzah to use, any other questions about your Seder, please feel free to reach out at any time.
You've been listening to the Jewish Living Podcast with Rabbi Nachum Math. Please do us a favor and like and share this podcast, ask a question, or leave a comment.